Hey students, welcome to the Education Empowered podcast, a podcast by students for students. Here, we amplify the voices of students across our LA Unified community.
We'll cover essential topics for LA Unified students, keep you informed of district updates, and highlight our peers who are making an awesome impact on our district community. Hi everyone, I'm Parishi Kanuga, the 2021-2022 LAUSD student board member, and I'm also a senior at Cleveland Charter High School.
Hello everyone, my name is Jaden Stewart. I'm a senior at North Hollywood High School and the inaugural 2021-22 Students Empowerment Unit student spokesperson, and we will be your hosts for this podcast.
And I am Salak Mian, the middle school correspondent, and I'm an eighth grader at Porter Ranch Community School.
Today's episode is our last episode of the year. And while it's bittersweet to say goodbye, we thought it would be fitting to talk about college, as Jaden and I are headed there next year. You guys responded to the email I sent asking for suggestions, and this was the topic that most of you wanted to learn more about. Please continue to send us those suggestions because they're really what makes this podcast. Okay, so before we start, I want to point out that we will use the words college and university interchangeably to refer to a four-year higher learning institution. Did you guys know that university is a shortening of the term in Latin, universitas magistrorum et scholarium, which means a community of masters and scholars? This means that when you attend a college or university, you'll become part of a community of peers seeking knowledge.
That's pretty interesting, but why would students want to attend college? I mean, I've heard it's a lot of work.
Well, there are tons of benefits, Salak, such as having job security, a better income, broadening your network, and ultimately securing a better future, not only for yourself, but for your family as well. But did you know that one of those benefits is actually enjoying better health?
Huh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's tons of research showing that the risk of dying prematurely is actually on the rise for Americans with less than a high school education, while this same risk is falling amongst college graduates.
Wow, why do you think that is, though?
Well, overall, college graduates do tend to have access to more quality healthcare and to nutritious foods because they have higher incomes. They are also more likely to be able to afford gym memberships and even perhaps the services of a personal trainer or a nutritionist. And these are all contributing factors to a healthier lifestyle that can result in longevity. So as you see, having a college education can actually add years to your life, which in my opinion is one of the most significant benefits of obtaining a degree.
So I'm an incoming high school freshman, so how would I prepare for my college research and application journey?
Well, it's crucial that you apply yourself academically from the beginning. Colleges will be looking at your report card from freshman year to senior year and evaluating how well you will be able to handle the college workload based on your grades.
Yeah, that's right. However, even if your grades aren't straight A's, that's still fine. Colleges are looking for improvement over time, and this was especially true during the pandemic, when many of us had difficulties adjusting to distance learning. But you can demonstrate your determination and perseverance by continuing to improve your grades.
But what if I'm taking the same classes, like AP or honors classes, as a lot of the other kids at my school? How will colleges set me apart from them?
Colleges want to get to know you on a deeper level, because grades and classes really don't tell the full story of how awesome you are. Many colleges will ask you to submit essays so that you can tell them more about yourself. And if you want to get a head start, many of these prompts are available online to view.
Wow, it seems like a lot of hard work to get into college, though.
Well, it definitely is a multifaceted process. However, if you make sure that you focus on extracurriculars you're actually passionate about, confide in your parents, college counselors, teachers, and other trusted individuals, and most importantly, prioritize your mental health, then you'll find it to be a very rewarding journey in the end.
I agree. Even beyond getting into college and having the opportunity to receive some helpful scholarships, I've personally gained a lot from this process. I've developed the ability to be persistent, set aspirational goals, and have made really good friends while learning about my passions through extracurricular activities. Even writing college essays, which may have felt like a lot of work in the moment, taught me a lot about myself by pushing me to introspect.
So how would college be similar or different from high school?
Well, college and high school are very similar in the fact that they are both places of educational advancement. So they give you opportunities to learn more about different things and require hard work and dedication to ultimately succeed in them. You'll also have the opportunity to make new friends and get involved with clubs or other organizations that interest you. So on a very base level, they do seem very similar.
Meanwhile, we could go on for hours about the differences. In high school, you don't really get to choose what you can study.
Yeah, I've heard that you have to take art classes in high school, but I'm really, really bad at art.
Well, Salik, in college, you get a lot more say in choosing the classes that you want to take. By selecting a major, you can focus on certain subjects that you may want to pursue even after college. You can major in fields ranging from computer science to music and so many more.
That's true, Parisi. At college, the opportunities are truly endless. And I think it's also important to note that college is a very future-focused place and that you can gain skills that are helpful for the jobs that you're interested in. For example, a lot of colleges have career centers where you have the opportunity to get connected to internships, externships, and other programs that give you actual tangible work experience in the real world, giving you opportunities to get your feet wet and truly explore things that you're interested in outside of a classroom setting. And inside the classroom, colleges give you classes and opportunities to equip you with skills that you can use in those sort of internship and externship scenarios. For example, you can take coding classes that might teach you about the fundamentals necessary to succeed in a software engineering job.
So if you end up going to a college that's pretty far from where you live right now, how would that end up working out?
Well, as someone who's going to college across the country next year, it will be a fairly big adjustment. But thankfully, many colleges give you resources to help. You'll often be living in a dormitory with other students and have access to a meal plan that you can use for food.
And that's one thing to look forward to. With college meal plans, at least the ones I've looked at, you'll often have access to an all-you-can-eat buffet for your breakfasts, lunches, and dinners.
All that seems like a lot of fun. I would get to do my own thing almost all the time. I'm really excited for college. And now, to continue this conversation, I would like to introduce our guest, Ms. Brenda Pensamiento.
Running away from a civil war, Ms. Pensamiento and her family migrated from Nicaragua to the United States when she was a teenager. A product of Los Angeles Unified, she graduated from Los Angeles High School, where she was an ESL student. While attending Cal State Northridge, she was a teacher's assistant. She began her teaching career as a third grade teacher. She returned to her alma mater as a Spanish and ESL teacher and later became a counselor, ultimately taking the place of her own high school counselor, Mom Lieberman, upon her retirement. Her experiences outside the classroom expanded as she became a coordinator, assistant principal over counseling, principal of a pilot school, middle school principal, and in her most recent role as the principal of Hamilton High School. She is proud to be the parent of two LA Unified graduates and a current high schooler. She is eager to continue doing her part towards improving the learning experiences of all the students in our district. Welcome, Ms. Pensamiento.
Thank you. It's really an honor to be here with you guys today.
So what are the different types of colleges that I could go to?
The sky is really the limit, and a lot of it has to do with what are you seeking to explore. You know, a lot of people think that college, it's the end. It really, it's a new beginning. It's, you know, what do you want to do in the future? Do you want to go to a community college because you don't know what it is that you would like to study? Do you want to go to a community college because you want to have a combination of classes and perhaps a part-time job? Well, you could do that at a Cal State as well. Do you want to go to a UC because you're setting a specific school? You want to be away from home in a specific environment. You want to go to a private school because there are specific things that you like at that school. I really think it is ultimately your choice in terms of where you see yourself for the next few years.
Just to follow up on that, I was wondering, how can a student really navigate what they want to do in the future? Like, who can they confide in, and what are some resources they can look at?
Every graduating class that I had the pleasure of speaking to, I would say, build a network, because you really need to talk to different people. It is really about trying to figure out what do you need, you know, perhaps creating a list of the things in terms of money, in terms of what do colleges have to offer. So that's your college counselor. The classes that you need to take, that's your school counselor. People know that as your academic counselor. But it might be that you have other people in your school site. Some schools offer home base or homeroom or advisory period. So perhaps it's your teacher. Connect to those adults that know that you feel comfortable talking to about the different topics that are related to college. And it's never too soon to start asking questions.
And I'd say that the adults that you can confide in, they'd also really help you when it comes to graduation. And one of the most vital components of graduation are the A through G requirements. So can you tell us more about those?
Absolutely. So A through G requirements are a sequence of high school courses that must be met to be considered for admissions to a university in the UC, University of California system, or the CSU, the California State University system. To meet admission requirements, you must complete all the A through G courses with a letter grade of C or better.
If you could just maybe detail what some of those courses are, just so our listeners can kind of get a sense of what that looks like.
Absolutely, and I'll give you some examples for some of them, because there is, even within the courses, kind of like a range of different course titles that you can take. So you need 2 years of history and social science. An example of that will be U.S. History A and B and Government and Econ in your senior year. You do need 4 years of English, right? You can start with English 9A, 9B, move to 10A, but you can take AP English Lang. You could take AP English Lit, or you could take Honors English 12, or in some of the, some schools offer some of the courses that also count as ethnic studies. You could even go to a community college and take the equivalent of English 12. So, but you need 4 years of English. That is the bottom line, with a C or better. You could take a language other than English. That could be American Sign Language. That could be Spanish. That could be Arabic. That could be French. So, you know, it all depends. Now, remember that I keep saying minimum requirements. As a former Spanish teacher, yes, 2 years is your minimum requirement. We want you to go for four. But that is what you need in order for you to apply. Same with visual and performing arts, right? Which is different than taking a class like a digital image, right? This will be like taking piano for a year, or taking a class in performing arts schools that offer different courses for jazz, you know, one of the jazz ensembles for 1 year. Minimum requirement.
So what you're saying is, to kind of just summarize it, that even though these kind of seem like very rigid requirements, there's still a lot of flexibility for students to really explore and pursue things that they're interested in.
Absolutely. There is a wide range of courses within the required courses. Really great way to put it.
Yeah, so kind of on that same note of exploring, you know, we know that grades aren't the only thing that colleges look for when they're, you know, looking to admit potential students. So what are some other activities or things that our students can be doing, things that maybe they could consider joining on campus to prepare themselves for the college application process?
I love that question, because I always tell my students, you are more than a GPA. Academics is one thing. Colleges really want to know what sets you aside from everyone else, right? You are here. What do you do, you know, besides going to school every day and getting straight A's? Are you in a club? What are you doing in your community? Are you a member of, you know, your church choir? Are you doing something for the community anytime there is a services that are provided to people in your community who might need support? I know of a group of students at a specific high school that actually got together and went and helped a group of seniors that were not getting visited during COVID, and just kind of sat, you know, outside their door and talked to them. All that transfer into who are you and why should this college pick you? And then the last thing that I want to add is, if a club doesn't exist in your school, go ahead and start it. There's nothing to stop you from doing that.
I'm going to give you two scenarios. So let's say we have a student who is super involved on campus. They are in their Model United Nations team. They're in their beach cleanup club. They are in the National Honor Society. They walk dogs as a job. Like, they have all of these different extracurricular activities, but they're kind of a doer of all and not really like a specialist in one thing. And then there's a student who really, really cares about the environment, and they're also organizing beach cleanups. They're the secretary of their Heal the Bay Club. They've started an Instagram account raising awareness about climate change. Which student do you think has a better profile that the admissions officers would like more when it comes to college? The students who's pursuing their passions, or a student that's really trying to do as much as they can?
That's a great question, because I don't think one is better than the other. It depends where you're applying, what you want to do. There might be a reason why someone is doing a million different things. I'm not going to answer your question with an answer, but I will, you know, give you a really quick story about someone. My own child, who went to a person who was helping out, a counselor, and said, I really want to apply to UCLA. And they said, oh, your scores, your SAT scores are not great. And when she came home, I said, you've spent 180 hours helping out with the UCLA after school program. You have been doing music since you're in middle school. Your grades are decent. Okay, so your SAT is one piece of the whole puzzle. That's part of who you are, but it's not who you are. So who you are, where you want to go, where you're applying, someone will want you there. Many colleges will want you there. I think the point I'm trying to make is there's no such a thing as better off. Every individual is unique. The idea is apply and apply and apply because you will land where they really want you to be.
So it's really about, you know, pursuing your passions at a level that's comfortable for you and kind of just letting the pieces fall where they may.
Absolutely. And in the process, when possible, balance. Because you don't want to stop, you know, studying for the math test or that econ test because you're spending all these hours, you know, cleaning Santa Monica. Yeah. It's a balance, right? Yeah.
So, I mean, I heard you talk about, you know, like applying and applying and applying until a college that accepts you for like who you are. And I really like think that that's a really good point because if you choose to go there, then you'll really feel at home there at that college. And you also mentioned while you were talking about the SAT, and when I'm talking to other people about high school, like the words SAT or ACT get thrown around a lot. So what are the SAT and ACT tests, and how/when should students be preparing for them?
So they're basically assessments that give colleges an idea of where you are in terms of being prepared for college. I do want to say that many colleges are moving away from those assessments for different reasons, which I think will be a whole different podcast at this point. It's not a bad idea if you're comfortable to take it. It's another piece of information that you're providing. They could show some information about you that maybe is not easily seen in your GPA or easily seen in other things that you do. So it's just another, you know, piece of information. I do always advise students, if you're comfortable, the district offered the PSAT for many 10th graders. Many schools do it in 9th grade. What I always tell my students is, your comfort level, right? I also don't want my students, my own children, which I never really made a difference. I think that, you know, all the students that we serve need to be aware that we don't want people stressing about these exams. You study and prepare for them the way that you prepare for your other assessments and your classes, and you do your best. But don't stress about the fact that, you know, whether how well you do in those exams will determine your future, because that's not how it works.
So I've also heard that the score that you get, you don't necessarily have to show that to colleges. Is that true?
You know, a lot of these things are changing, and you know, I want to say that I don't have the latest information. That's not, you know, something that I fully prepare for today. I do know that some colleges are basically saying we don't really want them unless you want to share them with us, and so you have that option. If it is you know, something that you really want to show, because it's another, you know, piece of assessment that prove that, you know, you are applying for a specific field, for example, go for it. But you don't have to for many colleges.
Just to kind of clarify, I think it really depends on the school. And I think that, you know, it's very easy to kind of lump all colleges together. But the reality, like we kind of talked about earlier, is that there are so many different types of colleges that have very different policies. So I really just urge you and all of our listeners really to kind of look at the websites and the online resources that we're going to talk about a bit later for all of the colleges you're interested in, and really do more research into what their specific policies are to ensure that you are very adequately prepared to apply. I know we kind of talked about this a bit earlier, sort of the ways that other people are involved in this process, because it is, for a lot of people, a very, very rigorous, a very multifaceted, and a very strenuous process, and it's really difficult to do alone, as someone who's gone through it myself. So how can we as students engage our families in this process, and how can we address some of the misconceptions about college that maybe some families who don't have as much access to information might have?
That's, you guys have all great questions today. It is about that network that I was saying earlier, and don't do it alone. Don't do it alone because, number one, you're young and you're learning, and you know, let some of us share our experiences. Getting your family involved is really vital. You want them to be aware. Whatever it is that you need and whatever the family cannot provide, really rely on your school to be able to do that. I always tell my own children, your counselor needs to become your BFF. There, you know, there should be an emoji for counselors, really, because that is the person that will walk with you through those, you know, 4 years. And I know that not all schools, you know, have the same counselor assigned to the student for 4 years, but your counselor has access to the transcript with you. They can walk through and tell you, you know what, maybe it's time that you try the dual enrollment course. Why not take the health class at a community college? It only costs $1, and it will go in this transcript, and it will also go in your college transcript. It will help you with your GPA, and I know I'm getting into something that you'll probably ask me later, but those are the kind of conversations that you would have with your counselor. Your family's at home. You need to have some of the conversations about, look, these are my top 10 colleges. Realistically, what are we looking at? You know, what is possible for my family to contribute? What is possible for me to, you know, provide to a university? And just make them part of that journey with you. It's a wonderful, complicated process, and you shouldn't do it alone.
And I just want to mention that not only talking with your counselors, families, teachers about the process, but also kind of figuring out your path and just figuring out what do you want to do. And I think that's not something that's easy to really finalize alone. So really talking about your dilemmas and your interests with all these people can really help you be confident in the path you decide to take.
Yeah, really, really sharing, you know, what you're going through with people you trust, I think it really does wonders with regards to alleviating a lot of the worries you have about something as big as your future, which can oftentimes be kind of, you know, concerning and a bit of a burden. I know you just talked about dual enrollment classes. Could you please share some more information about what that is, what that looks like for students, maybe what are the benefits, and how can students ultimately choose to enroll, and how does that process look like?
Absolutely. A dual enrollment is whenever a student can enroll in one of our Los Angeles Community College. LA Unify actually has an agreement with Los Angeles Community Colleges where students do not have to pay. Oftentimes, even the materials of, you know, the class are provided. There is a form that you simply fill out. You take to your school counselor, and you have the conversation about what's available. You know, let's just say during summer right now, I keep going back to health because I know for a lot of my incoming students at the high school level, I would say, look, if you just want to explore a class, start with health. Maybe take an art class. Your counselor needs to sign it because we want to make sure that you get dual enrollment credits, meaning that you get credits for graduation for LA Unify, but that you also get the college credit so that that can go into your transcript. And the classes really change. You know, if you're going to West LA College, you might be taking ASL as one of American Sign Language as one of your load courses. But if you're going to Trade Tech, maybe you are interested in exploring a career in mechanics, and maybe you want to take an intro course in mechanics. So it helps you greatly for your GPA, for your you know, building that, you know, strong transcript, but it also gives you that opportunity to experience something outside high school and start that whole, what do I want to do? You know, what careers, right? Because college is almost a little bit of backwards planning. where you might want to end, what you don't know might be the first thing that you want to look at so that you can plan ahead in terms of what you might want to take. But dual enrollment courses are courses that you can take at any community college in LA City.
Yeah, so this is a comment. This is just like my personal experience, what's going on right now. So you talked about like health and stuff. So I'm an eighth grader, and like a lot of people recommend taking health over the summer between eighth and ninth grade because it's kind of like something that you can get out of the way. So I'm actually planning to do that, and I'm actually might be dueling enrollment in either a community college like Pierce College or something else like Mission Academy.
It's great. And, you know, I gave that example of health, but there are a lot of electives that you can take. I have some of my students also, you know, taking yoga. They want to take a class. You don't have to go and pay somewhere where you can take a yoga class at a community college. And we can all use the breathing and the time away, right, to do well in our academics.
So. Yeah, that's so great. I wish I would have thought of taking a yoga class at a community college.
Don't worry, I'm thinking about it now, not back then.
So you talked about the different pathways that students could take, and one of these pathways are going to a public college in California, and this is significantly cheaper than attending a private school typically or a public school even in another state. So I'm wondering, what does the UC and CSU admissions process look like, and how do these processes differ from other private four-year colleges?
So in terms of the UCs and the CSU, besides the A through G minimum requirement to be able to consider for admission, a lot of it depends on what college are you applying to, which is, I think, the point that you were making earlier. You were right on. Great counselor, by the way. You know, every private college has their own set of minimum admission requirements, and that path will be determined by the colleges that you are selecting to apply. So having that conversation with your college counselor or your counselor at school is really vital, because that can help you determine, you know, the list. I always tell my students, come up with at least 10, right? You also don't want to overwhelm yourself and preparing for every single college. But in reality, some of the minimum requirements are pretty much the same everywhere you go. The other thing to keep in mind, and why I can't really go into details for each college, is because are you applying to a private school in state or out of state? And that, you know, might also influence a lot in the list of requirements for their admission.
Yeah, I think you did a pretty good job summarizing it. Just to kind of add on to that, I do know that the UCs and the California State University CSUs do have their own separate applications that you can use. So there's like the UC application that you can use to apply to all the UCs, and the Cal State application that you can use to apply to all the Cal States. And usually those are pretty straightforward, and they have usually less essays compared to some of the other schools. But I know you mentioned creating a college list. So how would someone who's in high school kind of go about that process, and what are some of the key factors that they should be looking for when it comes to ultimately finding institutions that they think will be really great opportunities for them?
That's a great question, because I really wish we could start this process way before high school. And it's just really, really exploring something simple as, where do you see yourself for those 4 years? Or 2 years if you're going to a community college first, right? Which I know we haven't talked a lot about it, but that's also an option. Where do you see yourself? What kind of elective courses would you like this college to offer? So if you are not set in a major, what are some of the things that you can do with your undergrad, with, you know, the first set of elective 2 years, basically, of elective courses that you will take? What are some of the things that you want to get out of college? What is the cost? What are you, you know, when you're applying for your scholarships, and let's just say you're in ninth grade and you're not anywhere near applying for FAFSA, right, for financial aid, but you might start looking at maybe having a group of schools. These are the schools where I really, really want to go, right? Like, I know my daughter said Columbia, Barnard, right? Okay, that's out of state. What about in California? And then a lot of people call them reach school, and then like your dream schools. I think that everything is a dream, and how you get there is really what, you know, determines what that becomes. So it is buckets of schools. You know, these are the schools in California, maybe these are the school in LA County. Maybe I'm not comfortable moving completely away from home. So just in case I want to do this, I really want to go to Alaska, right? So something as simple as where do you want to be located? What are some of the majors that you are looking into? I had a student who like really wanted to go to performing arts, but he was looking into UC Santa Barbara. And I said, let's go look at the electives. Is this really the school where you see yourself taking all the music courses that you want, right? Versus UC Berkeley. So really is so personalized, but I would say start by identifying what are the things that are important to you.
I want to highlight something you said because I think it's really important that we focus on it. You know, you said that it's not necessarily the best mentality to call, you know, one particular school a dream school because everything is a dream. And I think that that's so true, and we need to understand how privileged we are to live in a country where we can have those opportunities and have a plethora of opportunities for self-advancement, you know, all of the benefits that we talked about earlier in the show. It's truly remarkable, and I think that it's such an amazing opportunity, and I'd really encourage everyone to take advantage of it because it's truly amazing.
Yeah, and just to echo that, I think really spreading awareness and just making sure that you are taking the steps to educate yourself about this process, but also letting your peers know, really looping your parents in. I think just the privilege that we have, I think it's something that we should take full advantage of because it really does set you up for your future.
Absolutely.
And I think one of the pathways that you can take that I know a lot of students like to do is starting at a community college for 2 years and then transferring to a four-year university. A lot of students do this for various reasons, and there's a lot of like guaranteed transfer plans, at least in LA community colleges. So can you talk more about that and the benefits from that choice?
I'm going to tell you, as a parent, I love that path because it really saves you 2 years. So if you're not really sure about what you want to do, and I really wish more of our students really saw that. There is, I think, a disbelief that everybody, you know, needs to go to a four-year because, you know, that you know for sure you will finish there. There are a lot of students that, you know, need those 2 years at a community college for different reasons, and it's a great path. Not only does it help you financially, but it gives you a 2 years close to home opportunity to figure out what you might really want to do next. I'm not saying that you can't do that at a UC, but it just costs a lot more to explore at a UC than it is at a community college. And if you are an LA Unified student and you graduate, again, 2 years guarantee that you can take these courses, and you're absolutely right. There are so many guarantee pathways for enrollment that transfer students from LACC to Cal State or to UCLA. And I think that a lot of students don't really choose that path. I don't know if it's a myth or it just doesn't look good that I'm going to LACC, but you're going to college. Whether you go and start at a community college, it doesn't really matter where you begin. The point is that you finish and that you get your degree.
So you talked about how like community college is a space where you know, people have like the ability to explore into different areas and find like what really speaks to them, like what's their calling, you know? So one of the primary concerns that a lot of students have when applying to college is choosing their major. So how can students go about this process? And is it okay if they're undecided about what they want to study?
That is such a fun question because I know that as a principal, as a counselor, and as a mom, by experience, I don't really know many students, and maybe I can use one hand to count them, that started with one major and finished graduating in that major. The average student, and I've met a lot of people in my 25 years in education, change majors about 3 times in their 4 years. There's nothing wrong with not knowing. I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to do the next 10 years. I think that, again, right, a lot of the myth of, like, you have to know, there is no pressure on making that decision when you go in. The best decision is to get an education and to make sure that you go to either a community college or college, to a school of your choice once you graduate, and that you continue your education. It's about making sure that you are comfortable with that decision. But I don't believe that you have to know what you want to do right away. Nothing, you know, a lot of colleges actually prefer that you go on the clear. So that way, you know, they can help you find that path and that journey that best fit you.
Yeah, so like, I mean, I don't even know what I'm gonna eat for breakfast tomorrow. Like, so college is really just a place where you can figure out what you wanna do for the rest of your life, like what you're gonna add to this world.
I like that analogy because I think that, and it might not be for the rest of your life, because if you go and get your bachelor's in econ and, you know, you're working at a company and all of a sudden you find yourself in a position where, you know, I really might want to pursue law school, you do that. So I think it's about that path of life that will make sure that you are becoming the best you that you can become. And ensuring that you're gonna have, you know, just more security in your life. You know, education is a lot more than, just like I was saying, you're more than your GPA. Education is a lot more than what the salary comes with the career. Hey, coming from an educator, trust me, you know, you guys are really the gift. But it really is about finding you and you growing and making sure that the quality of life that you will have will be a lot more secure because you are getting an education and you are able to stand on your own feet in the future.
Yeah, you just mentioned the security that college can bring, but I think for a lot of people, they sort of have misconceptions, kind of thinking that college might actually detract from their stability because of things like student debt. You know, that, you know, paying for college is a concern that a lot of us who are going to college have. So what resources do exist to help students pay for college? How can students apply for financial aid? And how does this change maybe if the student is undocumented?
We're gonna leave the undocumented part for the end because that really hits home with me. Financial aid, it's available for everyone, whether it's through FAFSA, whether it's through scholarships. There are scholarships that you can get by having a last name that starts with letter A. I mean, it's that simple. I think it's really finding and spending the time doing the research. And just because it's only $500, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't apply. Apply, 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 because you're gonna get some money. And guess what? You're gonna need the money. I think, just like I said earlier, we can have a whole podcast about, you know, the assessments. I think we could do one about student debts, but I think that for now, know that this district offers a lot of support when it comes to financial aid. Many, many high schools, most of our high schools now offer evenings and weekend events and events outside the school and within local districts that give you that information on how to apply. But not only that, schools will hold your hand and your family's hand and say, this is what you need. And the process has improved. It's become a little less complicated than it used to be. So FAFSA, your financial aid form, is the first thing. Scholarships are so available. In many years, many scholarships go unclaimed because students think, oh, I'm never gonna get that, or that's too little money. Guess what? $500 times 20, it's a lot of money. And that can pay, you know, at least one-third of the tuition for a year at a UC. But students don't always think that way. So I think it's having that opportunity to. In terms of being undocumented, so that's how I started my career in college. And what I can tell, and I always tell my students, I'm not embarrassed to share my story. I did not know I was undocumented until I was a senior and someone asked for my citizenship and my green card. And I said, what is that? And I think that one of the things that I really want our students listening to understand is there are opportunities. Do not give up. There are scholarships that do not require you to have a green card. There are scholarships available for everybody. And there are also financial aid opportunities at the state level and at local levels for a lot of students that are undocumented. So do not stop going through the process because you think you don't have an opportunity or a chance, because you do. You can email me and I can talk to you about that too.
So about the scholarships bit, I mean, like $500 you could buy a PS5 in that money. Like, yeah, so you should apply for all the scholarships, no matter the size. And yeah, like just like take all the opportunities that come at you.
So like understands how to put things into perspective very well.
Yeah, I love your analogy.
I will ask about the PS5 later because I have no idea what that is.
Really? Thank you so much, Ms. Pensamiento. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and wisdom. It was absolutely great having you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. And just remember, there is a college for everyone. So please make sure that you apply.
Very great last words to leave us with.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This episode was really informative for me, but I have so many questions still. What are some other resources that I and other students like me can use?
Well, there are so many. We cannot fit that in even like 5 episodes. There's just so much online and so much that you can find even at your school, namely your college counselor. I mean, Ms. Pensamiento was here today. She was so helpful. And I'm sure everybody listening learned a lot. I know I did. And that's really what you get from a session with your college counselor. You should really make it a priority to meet with them at least once a month, just so you make sure that you're on track. Another thing that really helped me was just watching YouTube videos. I watched videos about people, how they shaped their extracurriculars to really do what they like, finding a work-life balance, even navigating different college applications. And then another really good resource that comes from the district itself is Naviance. So this is offered by the district, and you can basically log how your GPA compares with other people who wanted to go to a certain college, and also just tracking your extracurricular activities and finding the career that really fits you best.
Yeah, I think there are just so many other resources, like you said. I think some of the other big ones that we can touch upon is just college websites. I think every college is very different in admissions policies, and so the best place to be able to get information about that is from the college themselves. Look on their websites. They oftentimes have admissions blogs where admissions officers talk about different things they're seeing. They have podcasts, all sorts of information that's just right there available to you. You just have to go search it out. Also, Khan Academy actually has a contract with the College Board for SAT prep, so that individuals who want to study for the SAT can do so for free online on Khan Academy. And you know, there are so many resources, like we mentioned, but I think one of the most fundamental ways that we can go about accessing information is just to look it up online. You know, there's just so many different ways to access different people's perspectives on the process and different amounts of information. And I think that just Google searching it sometimes is one of the best things that we can do. So just a few final reminders from us on this subject. Work hard and never give up. In order to go from ordinary to extraordinary, you should do the following. 1, dream big. Never allow negative thoughts or excuses to limit your potential, and always keep in mind how awesome you are and that you deserve the best.
To add on to that, make a commitment to learning. All successful people spend years learning how to perfect their craft and develop a mindset destined for success. You should too. Know that it's necessary to step out of your comfort zone. Learning can be challenging, but your perseverance will pay off.
And last, but definitely not least, stay focused. You must work hard and be committed. There might be times when you might want to watch TV or play on a PS5 instead of studying, but you must remain committed to your goals and learn to balance your time.
That's right, Solik. And as we reach the end of this podcast, it's time for me and Parishi to say goodbye. We'll be graduating a few days, and I will be attending Princeton University in New Jersey.
And I will be attending Claremont McKenna College this fall. So this is the last episode we'll be recording as hosts. We're hoping that at some point we'll be invited as guest speakers.
Hint, hint. So next time, Education Empowered will have 2 new hosts, and our wonderful middle school correspondent, Solik, will still be here next year. And keep in mind, he'll be at high school next year and a full co-host, so congratulations, sir.
Congratulations, Solik.
Thanks.
And I'm also happy to announce that Nate Shin will be serving as our student board member for the 2022-2023 school year. That means that he will be the other co-host on Education Empowered. He's a rising senior at North Hollywood High School and is actually here today to say a couple words.
Thanks, Parishi. I'm so excited to begin working for all of you. LAUSD is full of incredible professionals dedicated to helping you all learn and grow. It's our job as empowered students to help them help us. Let's work together to bring 21st century technology and financial literacy skills into the classroom and expand access to the rich culture that our city has to offer. There are so many tools that the district provides, one example being the GoPass Tap Card that allows LAUSD students to ride the metro and other public transit for free. But there's always more that we can do. Most importantly, I want to hear from all of you. Please check your LAUSD emails and Schoology pages for further communication, polls, and leadership opportunities from me and my team. The district values your input as we continue to serve our students. Let's get to work.
Thanks, Nate, for those inspiring words. And thank you to all of you for being such amazing listeners on the show. After all, our podcast is student-centered, so we really couldn't do it without you.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for helping us along this journey. It's crazy to think about how the beginning of the school year, this was kind of just an idea that we had, and now to see it all the way, to see, you know, us having five episodes, it's truly remarkable, and I can't wait to see how far this goes in the future. You know, just from me, and I'm sure from all of us, thank you guys. Thank you guys for listening to us, and thank you to everyone who's worked on this podcast, everyone here at KLCS, Dr. Manuel, Dr. Franco. Thank you guys so much for making this an incredible experience. It's truly something I know that I will never forget. And we'll leave it there for today. The Education Empowered podcast is brought to you by the Los Angeles Unified School District's Student Empowerment Unit. It is a podcast created by students for students. Our goal is to empower students with information, practical tips, and advice on different topics of relevance to LA Unified students. During each episode, we will have guest speakers, experts, and other students discuss various topics. Disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed here by all participants in this podcast are not necessarily those of the Los Angeles Unified School District.
Thanks for listening. This is Parishi,
Jaden,
and Salak.
And we'll see you next time on Education Empowered.